I was thinking that it's kind of fitting with Memorial Day being tomorrow. A few years, actually just like 6 months ago, I spoke at a conference in Kansas City. Kansas City is home to the World War I Museum. And at the end of World War I, that was the song given all the soldiers as they returned home. And then that's what they sung as they went through the parades when they came back to the United States. So I always found that a fascinating song, especially with Memorial Day being tomorrow. I thought that was kind of fitting. Well, I hadn't really planned to say those things, but if you ever get a chance and you're in Kansas City, the World War I Museum is very interesting. So again, good morning, everybody. I'm trying to keep from saying the common things that I always say when I get up to preach, because it's exactly what we studied in our Bible class this morning, about kind of the commonalities of what preachers say before they start off their sermons. But this morning, I'm pretty excited today, because last Sunday, we did the study in 2 Kings 6 about Elijah making the iron float in the water. And when I was meeting with Brad, because we were working on our vacation Bible school things, I was discussing about maybe an idea to do for the sermon this morning. And, well, the topic of Naaman came up, which is great because it's actually just the chapter before what we studied last Sunday. So instead of like moving through Kings, we're actually going to take a step back. I want to thank Brad, too, for giving me part of his study that he did on Naaman maybe a few years ago, and I used that for a lot of the basis of the study this morning. So today we are going to be coming into the lesson thinking about God's simple instruction. We are going to be looking at 2 Kings 5. We're going to look at 2 Kings 5, 1 through 14. That's going to be the topic of today's study. When I first started working on this lesson and kind of laying this out, if I go beyond verse 14, it gets way more in depth. The story keeps going. We would not have time to fit it in this morning. So I am going to be stopping with verse 14. If I do in a continuation of this lesson, we'll start in 15. But I was thinking just for time's sake, we are going to try to fit it in this morning to do 5, 1 through 14. And we are going to be talking about God's simple instructions here. We're going to be making some reference to the instructions. We're going to be thinking about the verses. We're going to be thinking about Naaman as things are being laid out today. As I studied this, again, I'm always just amazed and shocked about God's word. We're going to be looking at that as we study things out this morning. Even just as I was getting ready and thinking about this sermon as I came in, we're going to be talking about things that I still don't quite understand, even the relationships between the two countries that we're going to be talking about today. There's an interesting dynamic that you wouldn't think would fit kind of the narrative of this story. So we are going to be looking here, and I'd like to start off by reading 2 Kings 5, 1 through 14, to get things in context as we start off this morning. I do want to mention that I would like to get some of the young men to start doing these readings. That's what I want to maybe start moving forward with here in the future, is maybe having some of our young ones read the ideas and the topics of the lesson. However, I didn't want to ask that. This has got some pretty interesting words in it. Didn't want to ask that this morning as we got started. So in the future, I'd like to work on that. So let's look here at 2 Kings 5, 1 through 14. Now Naaman, the commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. I am so wanting to like explain things as we're talking, and I'm going to try to refrain from doing that today, because what we're going to do is we're going to get through all of the verses this morning, and then we'll start breaking it down. So, he was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper. And the Syrians had gone out on a raid and had brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. Then she said to her mistress, "If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy." And Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus said the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Then he brought a letter to the king of Israel, which said, "Now be advised, then the letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that he may be healed him of his leprosy. And it happened when the king of Israel read the letter that he tore his clothes and said, am I God to kill and make alive, that this man sends a man to me to heal him from his leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me. So it was when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes and that he had sent to the king saying, why have you torn your clothes? Please let him come to me and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. Then Naaman with his horse and his chariots, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a message to him saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh shall be restored to you and you shall be clean. But Naaman was furious, and he went away and said, indeed, I say to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not Abna and Far, I tried to look up those words, the rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in rage. And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you have not done it? How much more when he says to you, wash and be clean? So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child. And he was clean. Now that's where we are going to stop this morning. I highly recommend to keep reading. The story gets stranger. The story there, it gets more difficult. And then there's other things that happen to Naaman as this goes off today. However, I didn't feel like we could fit it in. So this is where we're going to make most of our study this morning. Because we see in this story, we have Naaman. He has a problem. He is in pursuit of trying to resolve his problem. We see that he has a lot of pride. And then we see purification. If we were to break it down into those pieces. So this is what we're going to study today as we walk through these individual pieces. So this morning, I would like to start with Naaman. We're going to start here and we're going to work our way through. Now, as you guys know, I really like to play around with AI. And what was really fun about playing with AI for this lesson is it let me kind of create an image of what Naaman may have looked like. He is wearing bronze. We talked about the Bronze Age and the Iron Age last time. Again, this is just a fictitious image. But what was cool was is it lets me add Naaman into additional pictures as we go throughout the lesson today. I just get excited about that. So we have Naaman, who was a military commander. Now, Naaman was a commander of an army of the king of Aramea, which is in Syria. We're going to look at a map here in just a minute. We see that from 2 Kings 5 and 1, which we just read. He was high ranking. There was a lot going on with him because he was highly respected. He was a great man, deeply regarded. And again, he brought in a lot of wars. He was very favored in the eyes of that country. Not only was he favored by the individuals of that country, but the Bible specifically says that he himself was a man favored by God. And I wanted to point out here that it does say the Lord God here, and not his gods, but God had favored him. And, you know, that's interesting because this would almost suggest that God's providence, you know, would extend to other foreign leaders. Not only just any foreign leader, but earlier we see that there's actually a battle between these two countries. And it's interesting to think that God had favored things through Naaman. Now, it may not have been that war, could have been other wars. But we do have a divided kingdom at this time, so there's a lot of things that are kind of stacked up here. If you guys are familiar about maybe what was happening along this time, we do have a divided kingdom, right? So we have the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judea. We have the kingdom of Ammon. We have Aram, which has been like Syria. Damascus would have been kind of the capital of that time frame. So we see kind of where it's located, right? We kind of have Damascus way up here in the corner. We know that it was a powerful rival against Israel at this time. Now, if you were to go back to, because we're in 2 Kings, if you go to 1 Kings 22, you actually see where this country actually had a large battle with Israel. You would have had a king that even tried to flee. This was Jonathan. Even the king was trying to flee. The king actually dressed Jonathan up as he was fleeing so he wouldn't be killed as he was fleeing, but there was an archer that still killed him anyway. So there's a lot of interesting stories that stack up here in 1 Kings 22 where we can see the conflict between these two countries. Now, it was a strong army that they would have had. We would have seen that it was such a strong army that they would have actually taken a girl captive. Now, I had read multiple different ideas and thoughts along this line that it was partly custom, possibly during that time frame, that during raids, that whoever led the raid also got to take some of the spoils or the first spoil of the area, maybe like a servant girl or things like that maybe would have happened. Again, just showing how Nahum's power throughout battle was such prestige. And again, that we see this raid against Israel, that they would have taken this young girl captive, and this young girl would have known about prophets and the Lord. So she would have been from that area. And to think how this story stacks, because they're actually going to write a letter to the king of Israel. And I think if I would have received a letter like that, I'm like, are you kidding me? You're like, you want me to heal your best general? just to wage war against me? I find a lot of this kind of hard to conceive as we go through this. So we know that this is a very strong, powerful army that he had led. He would have been a very well-known person. He was very highly regarded, especially as you can see that he was able to go directly to the king. However, he had quite a problem. He had a large problem called leprosy. Now, if you haven't studied leprosy, I'm definitely not a doctor, so I can't really get in too much about leprosy, but the whole idea of leprosy, from what I understand from studying it, is you basically lose your sense of pain. And in biblical times, this was not a good thing. Some of the stories that I read were, take for instance, if you've lost the loss of pain, you don't realize that anything is wrong. So there was non-biblical stories about people falling asleep that were leopards next to a fire. They roll over, their hand goes in the fire. They don't know that their hand's on fire. There's a lot of strange stories like that. You could have bruises, you could have problems, and then you don't really know that you need to treat those because you do not have those pain sensors. So it's a very serious problem because there's a whole lot, it's like your body starts losing all of these the sensors and being able to do certain things. However, what we see in the Israeli communities in Israel during this time, that leprosy, you are actually excluded from being around everybody. We know that they had leopard colonies, and then we know about being clean and unclean from our study of the Old Testament. We see that there is actually things set up here for leprosy. Now, but we don't seem to see that in Syria. For some reason, in Syria, they had a little bit different way that they would have treated lepers, because we don't really see that Nahum would have been pushed away at any point. That he would have been able to live with everybody, to have this home and still be, a leader of war and not have been sent to a leopard colony. So they would have handled leprosy just a little bit different than God's people. So I'm just throwing that out there because that's a very interesting piece. And we see that leprosy, we see that kind of related to sin in Romans 3:23 and Isaiah 59:2 and Romans 6:23. we kind of see that leprosy is also used as a way to talk about sin in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. So as we go throughout this, we can kind of identify what Nahum's problem is, and he is trying to find a cure for his leprosy. We know that it causes him quite a bit of problem. He is trying to figure this out. However, the only person that seems to know how to fix the problem is the servant girl. So there's the servant girl that has been captured, right, and works for Nahum's wife. And she knows exactly how to resolve this. I think it's interesting, too, that she's bringing up how to resolve his problem. When I'm thinking, you know, she was just captured and made a slave. I mean, she's got a pretty big problem herself. But however, she's kind of focused on helping him or helping prove that there is a God in Israel. We kind of see similar stories if we were to study and read throughout Kings. If we were to go back one chapter, and you know, this may be a sermon that I may bring up in and of itself, we see the Shunammite son just in the passage before this being healed. We see that a Shunammite, and this man and his wife, they basically add on a place to their house so the prophet would have a place to come and sleep as he traveled. Well, their son is out working in a field, and he has a headache, and they take him back to his house, and he passes away. And then when Isaiah comes to the house, he miraculously heals him while he's there. But during that time, there's a lot of relationships, I feel like, as I read back over this, about how servants were involved. There was a lot of servants involved in the help of that Shunammite son. And we also see that there's a servant involved here with this girl as well as she's talking to Nahum. And I like how I have that picture. She's like telling him, like, you really need to do this. This is what you need to do to be cleansed. And to be cleansed, he had to dip in the river 7 times. Of course, we know that that's kind of a number of completion. And it's interesting that when the son is brought back alive in 2 Kings 4 and 23, he sneezes 7 times. Yeah. Because he gets up and walks around and sneezes 7 times. That specifically is said there in 2 Kings 4 and 35. So as Nahum knows he has this problem, he's been given a direct result of what he needs to do. She said, you need to go see the prophet of God. Now, is that what Nahum does? You know, I keep saying Nahum, like I'm adding extra letters when I'm saying that. Nahum. We see that he is on this pursuit, but he does not go directly to the prophet. He now takes it to his master, and then his master is either the king or is involved with the king. Because it says that he goes and tells his master, and then the king of Syria says. So I'm still trying to study that out exactly who his master is, or his master is the king, or he took it through, you know, some military lead, or took it directly to the king himself. I'm not sure. But as we see here, that he's kind of been given wrong information. Now, he was given the exact thing that he needed to do. But instead of going and doing that exact thing, he goes to his master. And then he has directions from a king. He has directions from a king. Not only does he have directions from a king, but the king also sends a letter to another king, thinking that this issue can be handled at a king level and not necessarily at an individual level, which is what the servant girl said to do. I also find this interesting, and I think I'm going to, you know, add this in as we're walking through this, especially at the end, because he takes a lot of money with him. And when we think about God's will and about what we need to do, it's free. However, with this Naaman's pursuit, he feels like paying for this is an important part. But as we go through this, it seems like he's made all the wrong decisions. He knew what he needed to do, but didn't go directly and do it. He goes to a master. He says, you need to do this. There's a letter written to the king, and the king is like, what am I supposed to do with this? He said, who am I, God? Right? He's, what am I supposed to do that this guy has leprosy. I can't do this. But we often need to think, do we do the same thing? In Jeremiah 10 and 23, it says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. And in Proverbs 14 and 12, it says, there is a way that seems right to man, but it ends is the way of death. We often think that we know what we need to do in situations, even when we're directly told that is not the thing. So we see Naaman's pride kind of shine through here. He has this prideful way that he's handling himself. Not only does he have this pride, but he even makes comments. I don't know if this comment was made directly to Elisha, but he basically said, well, I just thought Elisha was going to come out, wave his hand over the place, and I was going to be good, and I was going to get home. And he was offended that that didn't happen. Not only that, he was offended about where he should have went to wash. Because he said that his rivers were better. And they may have been. Because when you look at the rivers from Damascus, these two rivers, they're actually around a lot of mountain regions that had a lot of runoff. And even today, these waters are super clear. Now, this picture was taken during winter. As you can see that there's snow on the mountains. A lot of the other pictures that I was able to pull, they don't have ice or snow quite on those mountains. But as you can see, there's a mountain range through here. And you have that clear water runoff that's coming down through these mountains. Because we have Damascus here, and we have these two major rivers from this area that he is from. So he's like, well, why should I dip in those waters? They're not even clean. And I'll tell you, from being there, I wanted to mention that last time I was in Israel, I was right here at the mouth of the Jordan River, at least the bottom part of the Jordan River that flows from the Sea of Galilee into the Dead Sea. It was not a clean area. I often make the comment when people are like, okay, well, what was the Jordan River like? I'm like, have you ever stepped into the elephant house at a zoo? That's what it was like. That's about the best way that I can describe it. There were lines and lines of people there to be baptized. It was a very interesting place. However, these are my pictures from recent trip. And there's these fish, thousands of them, just thousands of these school of fish, that about the best way that I can describe them is they're like our carp. And those carp are bottom feeders. And they are just constantly stirring up that silt and dirt and gunk that is on the bottom of the river, and it is just constantly bringing up that smell. So I can imagine, I don't know if it would have been like this during his time, but I don't know. I don't guess I have any other reason to believe that it wouldn't be something like that. I can imagine he's like, what? The Jordan? Why should I go to that river? I do think it's interesting that last Sunday when we talked about the axe head following in the river, it would have been the same river. So just connecting those two together. However, oftentimes we are given this exact direction, but we don't follow it. These exact directions on what we need to do ourselves, but are we following it? Now, I really appreciate Brad for giving me his study to read through as I was working on this. And in Brad's study, he did a reflection on, like, baking a cake. About, we know what exactly those steps are. But since I found out I had a gluten intolerance, I didn't really want to talk about cake this morning. So I picked something else. I'm going to talk about a GPS. Oftentimes, as we're driving, have you ever ignored exactly what your GPS is saying? I did this twice last week. It did not work out well. Not only did I make this decision twice, but I forgot that the NATO summit was going on in downtown Dayton, and I couldn't get to where I wanted to go anyway because it was all blocked off. However, when I brought up my GPS, it had signs on it saying, these roads are all blocked off, go this route. It's like, wow, I wish I would have done that hours ago. However, if we're using our GPS and we've decided to go off track, what does your GPS always say? It's recalculating, right? Or make the clear next U-turn or something like that. So as I was thinking about today, we are given directions to go exactly where we need to go. But if we go off of those directions, we are doing whatever we want. The neat way about a lot of the way our phones work today is that if several people are stuck in traffic, that information is then fed back to our map system. And then it lets us know that, hey, there's a lot of traffic coming up because the GPS is calculating all of these phones essentially are staying still. So therefore, there's traffic there because these phones are not moving. That information is given to us so we can make a better decision about where we're going and where we want to be. So as we think about this analogy and we think about what God's word does for us, we have the same simple, clear directions today. Nahum had direct things that he needed to do. Because as we know, he did those things. Well, what happened? Like he was cleansed of his leprosy. We know we have that path that God is constantly turning us back to. We have that GPS map that we can set up, that we know we need to obey those things. Because Naaman's pride got in the way with this, and I'm going to use Isaiah 64 and 6 with this. Salvation abounds God's way, not ours. And Isaiah 64 and 6 says, but we were all like an unclean thing, and all unrighteousness are like filthy rags. We all fade as a leaf, and our iniquities, like the wind, have taken us away. Have we made our own decisions to be like a filthy rag or a leaf that just crumbles and floats away? I have a tree right now in my driveway that has some sort of sickness, I guess, and the leaves are turning black, and they are just withering on the tree itself. And I was thinking about that with this lesson. I don't want to be like that leaf or that dirty rag. And finally, Nahum decided to do the same thing. He decided not to do what he wanted to do. He did what the Lord had said for him to do through Isaiah. So the servant even goes back and says, Why didn't you do what he said? If he asked you to do some great task or some great thing, would you have done that? Thinking that that would have been better than what God said? If he would have said to do some amazing task, do you think that you would have had fulfillment? But he didn't. He just said, go dip 7 times. Because we know that being obedient to God brings cleanliness. We know that we are cleansed from our sins, from following God and doing his will. Because if we follow our own way, like Nahum, we will never find that clear path. But if we follow God, even with his simple instructions, would we do that? So when we think about following God's way, he has those clear directions, those clear instructions for us. We often try our own paths, but like Naaman, we must simply resist. So this morning, I want to mention that God has already made a very clear path for us to be Christians. He's already laid that roadmap. He already has our GPS set up. He knows what we are to do. They are simple. We are to hear, believe, repent, confess, and be baptized. We already have the map set out in front of us. I often think that this is a very, very simple thing, like Naaman just jumping in the river seven times to be cleansed. That's all he had to do, but for some reason, he fought against that. So today, when we think about these simple tasks to be saved, it's pretty simple. I often think if it was a challenge to do these things, like maybe Naaman was thinking, if God would have asked to do some big great thing to be saved, would we do that? Or is it really this easy? Is it this easy to understand these steps, to follow God? Or are we wanting to choose our own way that's separate from these things that have been laid out for us? So I want to thank everybody for their attention this morning. As we close this study, if anybody would have any prayers or would like to follow God's roadmap, please come forward as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.